You're listening to the Bossy Bitch podcast with Elsa Mitchell. Come along with me as I explore all the remote corners of Australia, uncovering success stories from women killing it in business. I'll inspire you, teach you, and best of all, make you laugh by sharing their journey and mine so that we can grow together in life and in business.
Mom, have you seen my pants?
Mate, get out of here with the podcast. Hello, welcome to the Bossy Bitch podcast. Today I am chatting to Beck Giles, who's just so excited to be on here, aren't you, Beck?
So excited.
Long time listener, first time caller.
Yes. I hate this stuff. It's all good.
Oh, you'll love it by the end, I promise.
I'm sure I will. This is a problem, and then I want to do more. That's how I generally roll.
Whenever anyone says to me, I listen to your podcast, I'm like, oh, my God, don't listen to the first five episodes. They are so cringy.
Oh, I'm so going to listen to them now.
And then, you know what? And this is just really good for anyone listening. Like, it took me, I reckon, about 50 goes to get my intro recorded because I just felt like such a dickhead the first heap of times I recorded it.
It's the same as doing the videos on your Instagram, isn't it?
I know.
Take 20.
Exactly. The times we live in. Anyway, so I've got so much fun and exciting stuff to talk to Beck about today. Great. We've got quite the journey. So, and a lot of it, I'm not going to get to it now, but we're going to circle back at the end for anyone who listened to episode 57, which was very recently with Claire Nation. We're going to circle back and talk about that a little bit at the end. And I've got a few things. So Beck, tell me, what do you do right now for a job?
Real estate agent, sales.
So I've got like a beef with a real estate agent that I've had for some time, and I'm going to win.
Nearly the whole public of Perth, Western Australia.
Yeah, everybody knows about it, but I'm going to get that off my chest later as well. But you know what? Firstly, this isn't about me. This is about you, Beck, and I've invited you on here today because, you know, we've had some fun chats and you've got an amazing energy that I absolutely love. And I wanted you to jump on. I wanted to share your story with my listeners today. We can have a bit of a banter back and forth afterwards. But I don't know your whole story.
What is my story?
Give us the truth.
What do you want to know? Yeah, I don't know. Where do you want me to start?
Well, I guess like I haven't known you for very long, and I know that you've only recently sort of started getting into nailing your career as a real estate agent. And so I kind of want to know the before then. Do you know what I mean? Like the sense I got from you is that you've kind of arrived at like this is your time, like time to slay.
Yes. Absolutely.
So I want the before.
So before dental industry. I was a dental nurse for a very long time, which I absolutely loved.
Did you really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Dental care at Corrine, and I worked at...
Oh, my God. I've been taking my daughter there the last few weeks.
There you go. Yeah. worked there for a very long time, and before that, prime children's dental care. So I did a lot of pediatrics, which I really loved. However, it's just something I got into from straight after school. So I kind of finished school, spent too long having too much fun, and my dad basically was like, right, you're going to do this. So he put me into doing dentistry, and I literally got all A's and like did really well for the first time ever, and I really enjoyed it. So I kind of did that, and that was kind of my career. And in that time I traveled, met my husband, had three beautiful kids, and I kind of worked. It was an easy job for me to have for, you know, a day or two here a week while my kids were little. Actually real estate kind of came to me through my sister-in-law, Lee. So they're the owner of the property project in Leaderville. So my brother also is a director there as well. So he does sales, she does property management. At that stage, she was about to have a new baby. So basically wanted me to come in and help her. I kind of was at that stage. My youngest was probably, 5 years ago now, so probably 8. However, my third youngest is, he can he basically brings up himself.
So, he is known. I think we have to stop and give Albie a little bit of attention here. Your son, Albie Giles.
I know.
Yes.
He's the mayor of Trigg.
He is the mayor of our suburb slash probably an outer suburbs and fondly referred to as like the Huckleberry Finn.
Yeah.
Everybody loves him. He is larger than life.
He is. And, you know, he's kind of brought himself up, to be honest with you. You know, we've obviously had a big deal to do with that. But, you know, I kind of was working and my husband was working away when he was kind of growing up in and out on the oil rig. So he was kind of home. And then Albie just, he was just that kid that could just do everything really quickly and really early. He you know, he cooks dinner. He can do everything. It's actually quite, you know, pretty cool. Anyway, so it gave me that time of going, oh, well, Albie's actually okay. I can do some more here and do some more there. So then that's how I got into property management to start with, which, to be honest, I didn't really love.
No.
Dealing with that side of real estate.
Poking through people's wardrobes is only fun for so long, right?
It was fun for the first few times. And then I was like, oh, no, this is not fun. Not for me. And then I kind of, you know, obviously it was a great start for my career because I got to know that whole side of property management, which I think is so important for a real estate agent to know the whole, you know, ins and outs of the whole game, you know, and it did give me a lot more knowledge when I went into sales. My brother started working full-time in sales through the property project as well, and then I just worked with him at the start. So I was kind of thrown in the deep end. And I loved it. So literally thrown in the deep end. he went away and left me with all these people to help and deal with. And he obviously trusted in me that I knew. I'm kind of, I knew the ins and outs, all the legalities and all that sort of stuff of real estate. But I think my personality is where it kind of shows through. You know, I'm a doer and I could, you know, whatever anyone wanted me to do, I'd just do. You know, nothing is too hard or out of the question. And I just made it happen, you know, basically. And that's kind of how it really started for me. And then
keep going.
Yeah. And then what can I say? And then I was with my brother for a while, which was great. Again, I had all the flexibility. He was really supportive and taught me so much. He's the king of negotiation, Carl Casilli, I must admit. He's the best negotiator I've ever heard in my life. Working in the police force originally, though, I think helped him with that. He was quite high up in the police academy before he came to real estate. So I learned a lot from him, and then I kind of outgrew the property project, I think. You know, I kind of, Albie got older again, you know, over those years, and I just thought, right, I need to start doing something for myself, really. You know, I spent all this time putting myself on the back burner, which I'm working on that to put myself first. But, and then all of a sudden I just kind of went, you know what, no, I'm going to actually do something for myself now. And that's when I kind of really put my heart and soul into it, which is killing me because I'm still doing everything at home. But like we do as mothers. My family are starting to understand that I actually need that time now, you know, so they're starting to pick up on little things that I need them to do for me, which is really good. My husband's my biggest fan. He thinks I'm just amazing.
Oh, my God. That is so adorable.
Your husband
is adorable. You have a beautiful family.
I do have a beautiful family. I'm very, very lucky. I am very lucky. So that side. And then this is where I am. Ended up at Ray White because I got this opportunity and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to take it and do it. I've always been I've been very mollycoddled my whole life, you know, I was a third child as well. So I've got amazing family support
forever
around
baby.
Me.
Forever babies,
you know. So me leaving my brother and then moving to Ray White has been remarkable for me. Very big. I had to put my big girl pants on
and divorce your brother.
And kind of went, you know what, I need to do this for myself and just, you know, throw myself into the deep end. And that's kind of what I did. So it was the first time in over 20 years that I actually was in a new job without people I didn't know and, you know, with people I didn't know. And you know, and yeah, had to swim.
Well, and essentially it's like, you know, even though you are with Ray White, it's your own business that you're running here.
100%.
It's creating your own personal branding. And so what I loved is, you know, in our chats, and I talk about this a lot, I see it a lot with women, they talk about their time. And I think you and I one day were down the beach having a chat and you were like, yeah, this is my time. Like, I am ready to, you know, I want to do this. I want to do it really well. And what I love about this is, because, you know, we're both a little bit over 40 and I don't know about you, but turning 40, I found it really hard. Like,
oh yeah, huge. I'm
massive identity
now.
Crisis.
Oh yeah, I know. I'm starting to tick that over 45 box, which is so scary. But that's okay. I'm actually okay with that. I love it. I don't know. I'm thriving in my age at the moment. I'm really loving it. I feel like I know what I am, what I want to be. I'm not scared anymore. I'm not, I really don't care what people think of me anymore.
Like, oh, isn't that a nice place to get to?
Which,
no fucks given.
No fucks given. Absolutely. None at all.
Okay. So now, you know, this is why this is a really good conversation because, you know, what there's so many other women that are turning 40 or have turned 40 or turning 50 or whatever stage you're at in life. But the reality is sometimes when you get older, you sometimes go through feeling a bit like, fuck, have I left it too late? I can't do this. I'm too old. I can't learn that. I've left it too late. And whilst I know that you think, because when I said come on my podcast, you're like, what would I even say? And you don't think it's, you just think it's, you know, because that's who you are. But actually, it's really fucking hard. Like,
yeah, it is
really hard. And you know, sometimes you go like for me, you go through a divorce, or you know, you experience some major setbacks, and you get that. You don't have that same, you know, when you're in your 20s, you're just like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'm just doing that. Like, it's just gonna work out.
Yeah.
You've got responsibilities, you've got kids, you've got bills, mortgages.
Yeah.
You know, that fearlessness massively depletes. And I think it's really powerful to have women like yourself kind of saying, like, yeah, fuck yeah, this is my time.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love speaking to women that are doing something new. You know, at a certain age.
Yeah, out of your comfort zone, which is what I think everyone needs to do. You know, I think once you get out of your comfort zone is when you really shine. You know, you're either going to shine or you're not.
Well, exactly right. So,
yeah,
it can be done. And you are quite obviously a very vibrant personality, which is your superpower.
Yes. It's not always a superpower, let me tell you. Gets me into trouble sometimes.
Well, you know, once a little bit of trouble along the way.
Yeah, that's fun.
But you do have a beautiful family, and, you know, you are an incredible human being. But also, just to tie in, this is a good segue into mentioning Claire, who was on recently on a recent episode. If you didn't listen to it and cry your eyes out,
are you even a fan?
Have you listened to it back?
I have, yeah. I listened to it straight away. Yeah,
I drove around yesterday listening to it and I was like, oh, my God, I'm getting depressed by my own podcast.
I know. Yeah, that was a big time in our lives, yeah.
It was the only podcast I think I've done even that I've actually like fully burst into tears, bawling my eyes out.
It's a lot.
And so you were a big part of Claire's story. And Claire and I actually, despite her tragic story, you know, I did kind of say to her as well, I was like, isn't it still sidebar from all the shit you went through, you know, also in your 40s and finding love and you've got this, you know, she's one of the co-owners of the property exchange, you know, so forget all the other shit that went down. Yeah. I was like, you know, even with her, I was like, I know that other people draw so much inspiration from seeing other women that are like, fuck it, and they're killing it, and it's amazing.
I draw inspiration from it, you know.
It's huge. It's so huge because it shows what's possible. But, you know, since you are following up from Claire's story, you did play a big part of that for Claire, what she went through. And I'm not going to tell the whole story because you have to go back and listen if you want that story. But Claire's story involves her husband passing away, and he was your husband's
best friend.
Best friend.
Yeah.
And you're Claire's best friend.
Yes. I don't even know how I got through that stage of my life, to be honest with you. I don't even know where to begin there. It was the hardest thing I think I've ever had to go through. But I suppose what was hard for me with all that is that I felt that I don't know how to say this, but I felt like I couldn't complain or whinge or cry to anyone because I had to look after Claire and I had to look after Gilesy and my kids. I mean, my kids were, that was their Uncle Paul, you know.
Yes.
And that time when Paul went missing, my husband went missing as well. So, you know, Gilesy was out constantly looking for Paul. You know, if he wasn't at work, he was out looking for him, you know. So my kids would be like, well, where's Dad? You know, is what happened to Uncle Paul going to happen to Dad? And then Sam, especially my eldest, went through quite a lot. He didn't eat for a while. We end up having to take him to see a lot of people because he just really, I don't know, it's funny how kids.
We told
all our kids that that Paul had a car accident because, you know, suicide's a hard thing to talk to about kids. And I didn't want, we didn't want our kids to know that they could do that, you know, that that is an option for them.
Yeah.
So we kind of just said to the kids that, you know, Uncle Paul was in a car accident and that's kind of how it was until they got old enough to actually really know the truth. And then we've been able to sit down and talk to them about all that. But yeah, for me, I was dealing with all that. And then I had, you know, Brittany, who was my, you know, she's my goddaughter, our first baby that was born. We were 20 when Brittany came into our lives. I don't even know how we brought that girl up. But, you know, it was just to deal with her and Tyler and little Cash, who was so little, was just hard. So I was trying to help with them and kind of just didn't even worry about my own children because I was worried about her children and worried about her and Gilesy. And Gilesy, you know, he went through a lot of guilt, I suppose, wondering why he, you know, Paul did what he did and how he couldn't help him and how he couldn't talk to him and all of that he had to go through, you know. And then, you know, he went back to England with Claire and the kids and I was still left here with the kids. That was, yeah, I don't even know. I had a lot of other support, so I had to lean on other people that kind of were on the outside, if you know what I mean.
So, yeah.
Because I
that
had
weren't
some feeling,
so attached.
That weren't attached, yeah.
Yeah. Which was, so, because you had your husband had lost his best friend to suicide. And if you go back and listen, he went missing for 7 weeks before that.
Yeah.
And that you was, had your best
that
friend.
In itself, yeah.
Yeah, who'd lost her husband, you know. Yes. And so, and I totally resonate with what you said before, that you were that person that was trying to hold up your husband, you were trying to hold up your best friend, you were trying to support their three kids who had just lost their dad.
Yeah.
And you would have had to have buried that shit deep.
I did. And I buried a lot deep, you know. And I still now, you know, I still, you know, when Claire went to Bali, they recently released Paul's ashes, thank God, because they were by the side of her bed forever, which was actually quite funny.
Getting a bit weird.
Had a lot of fun with those ashes, let me tell you. Anyway, bless Paul. He would have loved it. So finally Paul was taken out to Bali, which was, you know, that's where Gilesy and Paul actually first became really close. You know, they lived over in Bali for quite some time. We're in a surf movie, In God's Hands, if anyone's heard of that one, which is
hilarious.
Another whole story. So Bali is very special with Paul and Gilesy, you know, and also Claire met my husband and Paul in Bali before I ever met my husband. So that, you know, Bali's also always been this beautiful spot for them. So while she was over in Bali, I struggled that week.
Yeah,
you know, she's and I dead. Suppose I haven't really spoken to her about that much. She might know. I don't know, but I
she does know. She did say to me, actually, she didn't say it on the podcast, but when I caught up with her that morning down at Canteen, which is like our local cafe that is brimming at the seams, and I sat there bawling my eyes out like a maniac, and I was like, Claire and I were like, what were we thinking coming here? She did say she realized that when they, and it was after 10 years, they released the ashes, that was when you finally seemed to get your release.
Oh, I was, but I also, I it hit me very weirdly. And I kind of, I also was, I felt like I just need to protect Claire all the time, you know, like, and she protects me as well. Like, we've got the most beautiful friendship. We're deeper than friends, you know. We're born in a cot together, basically, which is another long story. But I just felt she was over in Bali with her three kids. And, you know, I was worried. I was like, God, how about if those kids are not very nice to her? Because, you know, our kids aren't very nice to us sometimes, you know.
It can be jerks sometimes.
Yes. As much as I love them, her kids are like my kids. But I'm like, God, if they're bad to her, you know, rude to her, mean to her. I was like, and she's over there dealing with this. And I knew she had to do this by herself, you know. And I've always said that to her. I was like, you know, she wanted to do these so many big things, you know, that to include everyone that was around. And I kept saying to her, I think you need to do this by yourself. You know, you need to do this with you and just the four of you, you know, no boyfriends, no girlfriends, no, you know, because Brittany had a boyfriend there and, you know,
yeah,
so just the four of you. I said, but then I kind of said that. Then I was like, oh, and me? I couldn't hug her or hold her or help her. And I think, I don't know, there's been, yeah, a lot of that. And it's not, I don't feel like it's not reciprocated or anything. Claire just hasn't had to hold me up before, but no. I'm sure my time will come when she will. But she holds me up in a lot of other ways though. You know, she's my go-to for everything. So
I think, know. I rang you and I said, oh, I think we're the same. So that we're like, we're both that those people, and not the people, yes, listening will get this, right?
Yeah.
You see people like Claire that have been through this just unspeakable grief and tragedy. Yeah. And then you and I are like those people where it's never really about us. We're just kind of, it's happening to the people we love around us, yes, which is a really,
absolutely,
you know, you kind of feel like, well, it's not about me. It's not me, but you're still equally, well, not equally, but, you know, you're still, yeah, have a very valid grief and, you know, that's still your tragedy. That's still your experience.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, it was very traumatizing for all of us, to be honest.
Yeah.
With you. And I think there's a lot of, and even, you know, my husband, I don't think he's really, you know, really thought about what actually happened at that time. You know, we were just on automatic pilot, you know, we were just coping.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, I am not anyone to be, you know, I've touched wood, unfortunately, not had an experience with suicide in my life. So I'm not the person to give a voice, yeah, to that. But I think to even speaking to you, to see how far the impact, and, you know, Claire said that, she goes, why did he go left when he could have gone right? The, yeah, impact on that one decision that it's had on so many lives.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It is.
And this is 10 years later, we're, yeah, still talking, yeah, about this, you know. Yeah. Your kids remember this. The impact is far and wide.
Yeah. My kids still ask questions. You know, they still, because, you know, we've, you know, like I said, we sat down and spoke to them about it, but we can't, you know, you still don't want to tell them the nitty gritty, you know.
No.
Because they're kids and you want to protect them, you know. But they still come out with things. Yeah, they still come out. I mean, oh, my God. Albie, you know, like, I never forget when Claire, so Claire had to take Tyler to, she was in the state Australia team for soccer. So during this stage, and at that time we were still looking for Paul, and my brother was a detective then, and so he was doing a lot of work and helping, and, you know, we were going down the route of speaking to clairvoyants and all sorts of stuff, like trying to get some information. And I'll never forget this one, and I had to go into Claire's house while she was away to go get one of Paul's shirts. You know, and Albie was probably, oh, how old was he? It's probably, well, it was 10 years. So Albie would have been two, nearly three. And, yeah, I remember him sitting in the car seat, and I was like, I'll just leave you, you know, I'm just going to run in and get out, because I was kind of a little bit freaked out by going into that because of everything that was going on. I was like, oh, I don't even want to go in there. So I ran in there, got the shirt, ran out, and Albie's like, oh, there's Uncle Paul. And I was like, oh, where? There was this swing at the front of Claire's house in Woodvale where they lived, like a big bench. You know those old beautiful, it was like a veranda with this big swing.
Yeah.
And he's like, there he is. There's Uncle Paul on the swing.
No.
Yeah. And I was like, and at that stage we were still looking, you know, we kind of, we all had this sick feeling of going, God, yeah, something may have happened to him, but didn't want to believe it, you know. So I was like, nah, what, you know. I was like, okay, I'll be, yeah, whatever. We just literally drove off. I never forget it. And I've often spoken to him about it because Albie has the most amazing memory. Like, it's, and I test him on it all the time because he says things and I go, oh, you don't really believe that. You don't really remember that. You've just seen a photo, or, you know, especially now with everything on Instagram, Facebook,
he will say stuff. So I said to him not long ago, you know, about the whole swing at the front of the house. And I said, do you remember going there? And he goes to me, oh, I remember you getting a red shirt. I said, well, do you remember, did you see Uncle Paul on the swing? And we laugh about it all the time, but it's like that little thing will just start a conversation, you know? And then it's like, it's so 10 years along, we're still having this conversation.
Oh, yeah. And like,
we've got to be careful. Yeah. And I've also had to talk to my kids about being, like, understanding that, you know, Brittany, Tyler and Cash don't have their dad and don't have, you know, and how to talk appropriately around them. You know, you know, that was so hard in itself to just have to teach my kids of going, okay, because I didn't want them to go around there and go, oh, where's Uncle Paul or where's the, you know, I kind of was like we tried to keep it as normal as possible, you know.
And kids can be blunt and just blurt out the dumbest shit.
Absolutely.
Circling back to Albie on the swing, you think, A, was he just fucking with you, or B, did he have that creepy little kid intuition psychic
Mate,
you know, like.
Absolutely. And I just think, oh, God, I just, these little things, and I think, fuck, that whole 7 weeks was just, crazy.
Horrendous.
It felt like, you know what I mean? Like now when I think about it, so much happened in that time. It's like, was that like a year, not 7 weeks? Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's so unbelievable. Yeah. That was 10 years ago, and here we are. Like, you both, I have a beautiful friendship that I know extends beyond just the two of you, but an incredible friendship. You both stepping into your time.
Yeah.
So for everybody listening that's maybe feeling like they're in the thick of the shit, like, it comes.
yes, it does.
It gets better. Somebody said to me recently, quite a few people have said to me recently, where are you have just been like, how are you not in a coma? Like, where are you getting your energy from?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, I think honestly that because I was so down and out and had so many hard years, that all of a sudden, because I feel the best I've probably felt ever in my life, you know, mentally and in all kinds of ways, I don't know. I think that's why I've all of a sudden got this energy I've never had before. Because,
well, you've got a purpose, don't you?
I'm happy.
Yeah, a happiness and a purpose. You know, you want to do well for your best friend and you want to, you know.
Yeah.
You've got shoes to fill. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think because when you go through such hard times, it does kind of give you this, like, I'm so grateful sometimes. Days at the moment I feel like just crying because, you know, like, I did cry this morning. One of my clients said the nicest thing to me and I just started tears and I was like, what the hell? How am I this person?
It's perimenopause, babe.
Shut up.
That's a whole other conversation.
We're not going there today.
We're not going there. We'll both be
crying. The other hot topic. Bloody hell.
Oh,
God. It's like being pregnant, isn't it? Just bursting into. Oh, I'm so grateful. I'm just so happy. But, so here you are. You thriving in your space, to slay it. You know, I did. Well, Claire, I gave her quite a bougie. I said she was like the queen of our western suburbs.
Yes, CB girl.
Well, you're going to be you are the queen of the northern suburbs. You've got to keep it fair. And I wanted to talk to you. I know this is a massive change of tune. We've kind of talked about being a mum, being a dental nurse, suicide, and now I'm talking to you about real estate agents. So, it's really quite
the topic.
Journey we've been on.
How much can I say here? Am I going to get in trouble?
My listeners are like, what the fuck, Elsa? You've just been quite the...
Love it.
Quite the journey. No, I did promise everybody at the start that I was going to have a rant, and you know this story back, and you've probably heard about 10 times, but I've never had... I mean, I had Claire on as a real estate agent, but her story really was a lot around Paul and her journey. Yeah. Haven't had the opportunity to get really talk real estate with somebody. So one of my favorite stories is, and you know who I'm talking about, but I'm not going to say any names. It's a local real estate agent in Perth who is quite well known.
Yep.
For stealing signs. Oh, my God, did I just say that out loud? anyway.
Oh, well.
Yep. We were selling our house and we sold our house, and we bought a house from the same agent. straight, like one after the other. And so this particular agent was kind of up and coming in the area then. He was really working the streets hard, schmoozing everybody. And what happens where we live in Perth, which is like the northern beaches, is I don't know about you, Beck, but you would start to notice doing what you do. There's just a handful of, like, particularly men that go to every single home open, and they're just really nosy on and just love watching the market.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
They're never going to buy a house. Yeah. They just want to know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So in this particular occasion, this agent had sold a house for quite a high price, and he was like feeling pretty good. So he went around and he went to all these people in our neighborhood that he wanted to schmooze because he sees them at home opens. And he dropped them all off a bottle of Moët champagne, beautiful, nice French champagne.
Yep.
And everyone was like, oh, did you know he dropped in and gave us some this champagne? And I was like, oh, sick. Like, I can't wait to get my bottle of champagne. Like, I've just sold a house with him. I've just bought a house. Like, I am clearly going to get maybe even two bottles of champagne, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, even one. Like, really? You could get more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at the commission that they would have made.
Oh, it was hefty.
That's not hefty. Yeah.
Anyway, it came day for me to get my gift, my thank you gift. And I sound like a brat, I realize that, but it's not, there's a point coming. He drops off on my doorstep a plant that he got from the corner store. And I know that because I go to that corner store all the time, costs about $12, and a pack of four Ferrero Rocher chocolates. I was pissed. I've never gotten over it. I was like, you can't go around dropping something to prospective clients. Meanwhile, I am this amazing client.
Giving you business.
It's just not cool.
This is the funny thing in this game as well. You know, like, obviously that's one negative thing that's happened, and you've told that story to so many people. You know, which is, this is where it gets really tricky. You know, like, you do a lot of good things and people don't often, you know, talk about it. You do one bad thing, especially when you're in a, you know, when you are selling in a close-knit suburb. You just can't afford to do anything bad like that.
Well, and the thing is, and this, like, I recently was up in Exmouth, and there was a lady up there that spoke who owns some of the restaurants up there, and we were talking about, you know, because I'd told this story again, far and wide. And the point is about customer service and treating everybody the same, and, you know, that's my point. But this lady said, oh, she was pregnant. She went in one night to the restaurant and she was grouchy, as you are sometimes when you're in a restaurant.
You can't have a wine.
Yeah. And she was a bit cross at her staff because I hadn't done something she'd been asking him to do for weeks. And she was behind the counter and she had a bit of a go at the staff. So one of the people in the restaurant got on Google reviews, left her a really nasty review saying, oh, the owner was horrible. She was so mean to her staff. It was disgusting, blah, blah, blah. And this lady said, well, you know, fair enough. Yes, I probably shouldn't have been so grouchy in front of, you know, I didn't realize the clients could hear, but she said, what they don't see is that I've had 9 of those staff members living in my house because they had nowhere to live.
Yeah, yeah.
They're driving my car. Like, she's like, they don't see that. They just
see that
they saw that what one little moment where she was not completely at her best.
Yeah, which is hard.
Yes. And I think people can be quite forgiving of the odd slip up, okay? But
absolutely, yeah. We're all human at the end of the day, you know.
Yes. So for you, being in real estate, which is quite often can be quite a male-dominated space, can't it?
Very male. I have males all over me.
Do you feel like it still is?
Yeah, it is. I think women are definitely starting to make their mark. I don't know. I think it's very old school. You know, a lot of people think real estate agents should be a male. They're the ones that, you know, earn the bread in the house. But what they don't realize is that women can multitask. You know, and I think
real estate is about juggling balls all the time, you know, and sometimes I do think, how do men actually do it? I often think, because, you know, men generally can't do two things at once. Whereas this job, I mean, you speak to Claire, we talk about it all the time. You know, you could, you know, you have your day planned out and all of a sudden it can just turn, you know.
Ooh,
and
yes, a couple of offers.
Very, very, I mean, today I've been doing a lot of things. I just got a phone call now about some structural defect in a property, which I'm going to have to deal with ASAP. That's, you know, it can't just wait. So I don't understand how men as agents can actually manage that.
Yes,
you know, not talking about a turn, but come on, I've got two sons and a husband, and they're hopeless at micromanagement. And they're great. They, you know, if their day doesn't go the way they planned it, they can't handle it. And sometimes I go, wow, how do men in general, as a real estate agent, not that there's some amazing male real estate agents out there, but I just do often think that, you know, I think, you know, how do they manage all of that? You know, you've got your buyer, you've got your seller, you've got, sometimes you've got a divorcee couple, you know, male or female, you know, sometimes you're doing that in the middle of a sale. So, you know, you can speak to one, then you've got to speak to the other, and then you've got to, you know, it's tricky. And, you know, you could have four children that own a property that their parents have, you know, deceased, and you're dealing with then four separate sellers, you know, they've all got a different opinion. So there's a lot that you've got to juggle constantly.
And you don't even think about it. And the other thing is as well I find interesting is, and this is just like based on my own experience, having worked with my ex-husband who had a building company, was I found it was the wives that would usually make all the big decisions. Like,
yeah. No, it is. I agree. 100%.
They'd send the man out to do the wheeling and dealing and yelling and screaming when things weren't right. But behind it, it was quite often the wife that was making all the choices, choosing how much money was going to be spent, choosing what was what, who was getting what.
Yeah.
You know, driving the decision process, which I imagine is probably quite often the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of, you know, I speak to a lot of men and, you know, they'll say, oh, wait, you know, got to wait, run this past the missus always. It's like, okay, no problem. and that's why, you know, I like to meet both parties at the same time if I'm, you know, chatting to people regarding their home because, yeah, it can be very confusing if you don't.
Oh, absolutely. But also as well, like real estate's one of those things like where it's been, you know, like why is so often someone's head just on a bus stop? It's like the rug store that has the closing downtime.
Everyone thinks that you're, in Parliament.
Yeah, it's funny though. Hey, it's like one of those industries that just has its own rules and its own like way of doing things.
It does.
So I guess then it's carving the way to establish yourself as, you know, a point of difference. There's so much personal branding.
There is a lot of personal branding. Yeah. There's a lot of holes in the system as well. And there's a lot of, real estate is, it's a funny game. You know,
yes.
I still get shocked every now and again. I think, oh God, really? You know, like I just try and stay on my own lane. You know, I think I'm just a good person and I just want good things for good people, you know, and whatever their circumstance is, you know, I just want to get the best, price for their home. I want to give them that service every single time. And it doesn't matter if I'm selling Intrigue or if I'm selling in Butler or Balga or in the city, the process is exactly the same. Doesn't matter what the demographic is, you know?
Absolutely. And I think, and that's the point, right? Consistent with your customer service, which was what my beef was before with the Ferrero Rochers and the plant.
If you can't do it properly into everyone, just don't do it at all. You
correct.
Know?
Like because you make people feel like shit, like they absolutely. Don't matter or they're worthless. And we're all, you know, should be worth the same as a client.
Yeah.
I think the other thing for you, which has given you quite a lot of leverage and an advantage, is that you are so established in the local community. You know, everybody knows Huckleberry Finn, your son.
Yes. Oh, I go to appraisers and people say to me, do you know Albie or Gilesy? And I'm like, yes, they're my family. Then I feel like going, should I leave or should I stay?
It's like, oh, you're Albie's mum. Oh, you're Gilesy's wife.
Yeah.
I'm Beck Giles, motherfucker.
I'm actually Beck. Start knowing who I am. That's, It is a funny thing.
I want to share one other thing before we wrap this up that you did that I loved. Because you and I have been like bouncing around ideas a lot on, you know, getting out there and being seen and standing out from the crowd and not just being another face on the bus stop. And can you just tell everyone what you did on Halloween? Because I love that story.
My lollies. Yeah, second year I've done it, actually. They're the best. So I just go on, well, Chrysostom Street in Trigg is huge for Halloween. People come from all over the Northern Corridor, really, to that area. One of my other best friend, Reza, and she lives on Chrysostom Street. So I just walk over there with my husband. We have a few wines and I have a whole heap of lollies that I get made, and I put my sticker on there with my face and my information, and I just hand it out to all the, well, I try and give it to the parents.
Yeah, but do you know what? Do you know what the parents do is the next day while the kids are at school, we go through all their Halloween candy.
Correct. That's right.
Exactly. Yes.
So that's kind of where it went from. And, you know, it's not about getting leads from that or anything like that. It's more about just being present in the community and just so people know who I am and where I am, and that I'm not, you know, I want to give and not just take as well. And I think that's the biggest thing in real estate. So many agents, you know, get lost in that. They just work to go, okay, well, you know, I've got to sell that to get that commission, or I've got to,
money,
right? I hate, you know, it's the biggest thing that I despise about this industry, because I think, yes, okay, there is a lot of money that can be made in this industry, but there's also people's lives that you're dealing with. Huge. This is their biggest asset ever, you know.
It's really stressful and emotional.
It's really, really stressful. And like I said to you before, there's divorce, there's death, there's so many things that are behind the scenes that we don't always know. So you can't, I don't know, I treat everyone the way I'd want to be treated, and I've always done that. And I think a lot of that comes from my training and my learning through being in the dental industry. You know, I had to learn compassion. I had to learn, you know, to be caring and giving, because that's kind of what I did, you know, all the time. So it's taught me a lot in this game. And I feel like, you know, I think, you know, I try and get myself out there more so people can know that I'm actually a good person. I'm doing this for, you know, I love it. There's nothing better than I love is selling that home and the new buyers coming in and, you know, moving into their home. I love that whole process. That's the best part of my job, you know.
Especially at the moment where the real estate's like,
I made $5,000, $10,000, $20,000. You know, that's, yes, it's all great. But there's so much more to it than that, you know.
And at the moment, the market's just so competitive. So, like,
to get that
top price and to have, like, if you get, like, 30 offers, the one that gets through is just like, yes.
Oh, and then you've got to tell 29 people that they've lost their dream home. It's awful. And then all I do is promise them all, okay, I'm going to help you. And then there's no stock. You know, there's no stock, which is really hard. It's dog eat dog out there for agents at the moment. You know, everyone is trying to get listings, you know.
Isn't it such a weird time?
It's a very weird time. They're selling very quickly, but there's just nothing. I mean, where are we? I think Rewa, the stats came out yesterday. We're 42.9%, I think it was, lower than last year.
No way.
Of listings that are on the market, you know. So, you know, it's because we've got this rental crisis, which is all just, you know, it's hard.
Do you want to make a
prediction? There's a lot of people that want to move. There's a lot of people that want to move, but they just –
Some people want to sell too, like me.
They all do. Yeah. We're working on that.
I'm going through a divorce, so, you know, I would love for my house to be in your hands soon.
Oh, well, I don't know.
So if you had to make a prediction on the Perth property market for the next 2 years, what would it be?
I think it's going to keep going up. I think there will be more stock that comes on. Well, I'm hoping there will be, because of this whole rental crisis. And I think, but I think a lot of my buyers are saying to me, Bec, I'm just going to wait till it crashes.
Yeah.
I really don't think it's going to crash.
I don't think it is either. I agree with you. I don't think it is.
No, we haven't really grown in the last 10 years, really, only since COVID. But prior to that, Perth was really flat. Like it's so cheap.
Well, we were a long way behind Sydney and Melbourne, weren't we?
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I just think, you know, I tell all my buyers, I'm like, if you want to get into those nice, good suburbs, you need to get in now. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to get in. You know, I've got buyers over the last 2 years that have been looking for property, and they started off wanting Trigg and now they're going to Duncraig, or, you know, going further on north because number one, the interest rates have gone up, so they can't afford that anymore. Or number two, the prices are just they keep growing.
Yeah.
Especially for a, you know, attractive suburb.
Well, this is the perks of my divorce going on for years and years and years, is that actually my asset is just going up and up in values.
Absolutely.
That's yeah.
It is. Yeah. And I really don't see it slowing down at any time soon. I don't.
Yeah, I agree with you. Okay.
We just need more movement. We just need more stock and more movement. And I think the building industry, that's where it's kind of held everything up, you know?
Yeah, because people don't want to build, right? So,
Well, there's also people that are renting because they're building and their build has taken
an extra.
You know, so now they're in those rentals longer than they planned to be. You know?
True. Yeah, I actually haven't considered that.
Yeah, it's another thing.
A lot
thing,
of people are saying people just don't want to build right now because it's just, the building industry has been a bit of a shit show and it takes so long. So everyone's like, well, I'd rather just buy. So the land, you know, like normally it's land value. The actual value of a house on a land has gone up because
hugely, people
are like, well, normally you just go buy a block and build because it's probably cheaper.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. No, not at the moment anyway. So,
and I think a lot of people are also time poor now, you know.
Yeah.
Back, like people don't have, they're not patient either. Like people just want things now, especially that younger generation, you know. So a lot of these, you know, whereas when we were younger and we were all buying our first, so many of my friends were building and, you know, doing all that, and that was great, you know. But now they want, you know, I just sold a house in Duncraig not long ago. Well, it's still in the, like 2 weeks ago it went under offer.
Yep.
That house was beautiful and it was completely done. Like completely done and nothing else to do in that property. And it was, I can't even tell you. We wrote so many offers on that property. We could have sold it 20 times over.
Wow. But
purely because it was completely done. So people are time poor. They don't want to wait for things. They just want it now.
Yep.
You know, and hence why the prices are going up, you know, for properties like that, because it's what the market wants.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
No one wants, you know, everyone wants a 4-bedroom, 2-bathroom home, you know, with a pool, with this, with that. You know, they all want it for like 800,000.
Yeah, double it.
Yeah, it's like, you know.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway.
Well, okay. So, you know, if you're looking for a real estate agent, Beck Giles, I'm going to pop all the links in my show notes. For you to come find Beck and stalk her online. And Beck, thank you so much for talking to me about absolutely anything and everything today.
I always worry about doing this, but I think I've got so much to say.
I know. It's like, how do you fit one thing in when we've got a million? That's all right. We'll get you back for round two. So thank you so much.
When I'm the best real estate agent in Perth, you can get me back.
What are you saying? You already
are. Actually, not the best, the most successful real estate agent in Perth. I'm already one of the best. I'm just not, you know.
You come back with all your secrets on how to be successful without putting your face on a bus stop.
Oh, yes, please. Although my face is on a bus stop, let's be real.
I want my face on a bus stop. I'm like, maybe there's something to this.
You can chuck your face on with me if you like.
Thank you, Beck.
No worries. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Bossy Bitch podcast. I am Elsa Mitchell and you can find me at elsamitchell.com.au, or if you'd like to meet my friends, please head on over to Facebook and I invite you to join our free group, Bossy Bitch.